You're recording?
Okay. Good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, December 14th at 8:36. We're going to call this meeting to order. Please note, we have our Attorney General, Mark Harris, present, Assistant Attorney General. And Victoria, would you do the roll call for me?
Yes.
Director Byrne?
Here.
Ms. Krieger?
Here.
Ms. Frost? Dr. James? Mr. Logie? Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
Dr. Wright?
Here.
We have quorum.
Okay. However, I did just realize that Dr. James is the lead on the first one. I'm going to throw off our order again. So we'll hold off on that. She'll be here in just a couple minutes. So let's go down to 22-131, number 14, in regards to Elizabeth Munhall, DVM. And Tracy, if you would read us the summary.
So case 22-131. The complainant is the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board, and the respondent is Elizabeth Munhall, DVM. On August 14th, 2021, Toby, an approximately 8-year-old male, LaShawn Maltese Mix, was presented to the respondent's associate, Dr. Vixen, for a dental cleaning. Blood and urine was collected for testing and revealed the dog was a surgical candidate. The procedure was performed, and the dog was discharged later that day. On August 17th through August 20th, 2021, the dog was presented to respondent's premises due to vomiting and not eating. The dog did not improve, and blood work revealed elevated liver enzymes. On August 21st, 2021, the dog was presented to a specialist for advanced diagnostics and treatment. After evaluation and abdominal ultrasound, acute hepatitis was suspected. And the committee concluded that possible violations did occur, and it was moved and seconded the board find ARS 322233B3 for failure to document in the medical record on August 17, 2021, the treatment and diagnostics recommended to the pet owner. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-1 with Dr. Babb opposed.
Thank you, Tracy. So we do not have the complainant present, but we do have the respondent's attorney, if she would like to come forward.
Good morning.
Hi there. Please introduce yourself, and then I can give you 5 minutes to speak.
And hey, on behalf of Dr. Munhall, who is not able to be here today, she now lives in Texas. We are requesting dismissal with at most a letter of concern for the record keeping issues. Dr. Munnell saw this patient on two occasions and each time provided appropriate care. On August 17th, 2021, the dog was 3 days post dental cleaning. The vitals were within normal limits. The physical examination showed that the dog was well hydrated, had pink, moist mucous membranes, the abdomen was soft and non-painful. There was no organomegaly or masses. Dr. Munhall discussed with the owner that this could be post-anesthetic reaction from the dental cleaning or something else like inflammation, infection, dietary indiscretion, extra alimentary disease. Dr. Munhall explained the options with the owner, including to pursue diagnostics to see what was causing the issue, and that if those were within normal limits, they would need to decide whether to pursue additional imaging or do medical therapy. She also explained that if medical therapy was elected and the patient failed, for example, by vomiting through the medication, still not eating, worsening, having new signs, etc., they would need to recheck sooner. She also recommended further workup of the pet with blood work and imaging, but the owner noted that Dr. Bixson, who had performed the dental cleaning, had done diagnostics and didn't have any concerns. Dr. Munhall explained that the labs could have changed since then, but the owner declined further testing and diagnostics. Dr. Munhall discharged the patient on Sirenia and explained that if the pet continued to vomit, that he could have severe or yet to be diagnosed underlying illness. and instructed the owner to contact the clinic if the pet didn't improve. Dr. Munhall acknowledges that this conversation should have been charted and that the recommendation for diagnostics should have been charted. It is her standard practice to do so. It was just inadvertently omitted for some reason in this instance. However, the care provided and the recommendations on this date were appropriate. There was nothing to suspect liver issues, and she appropriately recommended further workup and diagnostics to investigate, but the owner declined. Dr. Munhall again saw the patient on August 20th and provided appropriate care in that instance. The dog had worsened, and physical examination revealed dry icteric mucous membrane with a ventral abdomen. They ordered blood workup, which revealed elevated liver enzymes. After some back and forth with the owner and her daughter, which is detailed in our response, Dr. Munhall succeeded in recommending additional imaging. An AFAST scan was completed showing mild liver enlargement and mild sludge in the gallbladder. Dr. Munhall recommended immediate internal medicine or ER referral, but the owner said that she would go to veterinary referral the next day. So Dr. Munhall dispensed Denimarin and sucralfate. This was again appropriate. When the dog showed concerning symptoms, Dr. Munhall pushed harder to get imaging and referral despite the owner being resistant. She recommended referral and imaging and ensured that there would be follow-up. Accordingly, all of the care that Dr. Munhall provided was within the standard of care and did not cause any harm to the dog. The expert report that we have submitted by Dr. Nick additionally explains that the pet's prognosis would not have changed had anything differently been done on August 17th. So the only issue is that Dr. Munhall omitted documentation of her conversation with the owner on August 17th regarding recommendation for diagnostics, which she acknowledges she should have done. Continuing education on this would not have avoided this issue, as it was only an inadvertent error. Dr. Munhall already knew of the requirement to document this type of conversation and already had the custom and practice of doing so, just inadvertently did not do so in this instance. Just briefly, there was some discussion at the investigative committee regarding some concerns about a note from August 20th about therapy being declined for skin impressions with cytology and stain. This has been explained, but this was an error by a technician that does not rise to the level of a violation on behalf of Dr. Munhall. This was not a recommendation for skin impression with cytology and stain. It's believed that that was meant to be the recommendation for the AFAST scan. It was selected as postponed because originally the owner did not want to do the AFAST scan, and in the type of software that is used at that clinic, once you select postponed, you can't go back in and select accepted. Dr. Munhall does not have control over the software. She doesn't select the software. She doesn't make the software. She wasn't the one that selected the incorrect skin impression with cytology and scan. And she understands if the board is concerned over the error, but it was a simple mistake by a technician, not one made by Dr. Munhall, and she did not design the software that gives rise to the issue, that the error cannot be corrected in the record. Accordingly, we are asking the board for a dismissal with at most a letter of concern for the record keeping issues related to the conversation about diagnostics on August 17th. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Please let the record state that Mr. Lougheed and Dr. James are now with us. They will be recused from this item. And just so you folks know, we are on 22-131, which is number 14. Dr. Nosley, you are the lead on this one.
Okay, thank you. Just briefly, this was the case of the post-dental recheck by colleagues in the hospital, where ultimately the dog had a significant hepatopathy, and the question that the board had is, was the follow-up care appropriate? In this case, the respondent, as counsel outlined, saw the patient on the 17th, and on that visit, the question is regarding whether diagnostics were to be performed, were they offered. Unfortunately, in these cases, we have obviously the complainant saying one thing and the respondent another. But in these cases, unfortunately, we have to go by the medical record. And if it's not in the medical record, we have to assume that it wasn't offered and it's not in the record. So the investigative committee recommended a violation for failing to document in the record that the diagnostics were offered and declined. And there's a question whether they were declined or not. So that's what we're faced with here. In addition to that, then, on the follow-up visit on 8/20, I had some concerns there that I wanted to discuss. The pet now had seen another associate, now was back again. Now we're on day 6 of vomiting and not eating post-dental. And on this visit, diagnostics were done and the liver problem was discovered. The pet was dropped off at 9 o'clock in the morning. And we don't know, it's not time stamped in there when the blood work was done. My question is, should treatment have been offered for the pet once we discovered these very, very high liver abnormalities? I would believe that at that point in time, we should have offered treatment, IV fluids, supportive care should have been good. But it didn't happen, and then when the owner came back for the, at the end of the day, there was some discussion going back and forth, and ultimately a scan was done, which was good. And then it was kind of left up, okay, it's kind of up to you now. I recommend a specialist or emergency, but the dog was there all day and I would have liked to have seen treatment have been offered. And that's what I wanted to talk about as far as the 8/20 visit. So I want to hear from the other board members how they feel about that particular visit and also on the 17th, the failure to recommend diagnostics in the record. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
I would tend to agree with you on the diagnostics on the initial recheck.
The first visit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, it is hard, as you said, if it's, we go by the medical record. If it's not in the medical record, it didn't happen. And so while that conversation may have been had, we just don't have proof. And it turns into a responding complainant who's right and who's mm-hmm. wrong. But at the same time, I also know there's times where you get sidetracked, busy, whatever, and you forget, right? We are all human. I also would agree, and it's hard not necessarily having the respondent. While we have representation, we don't have the respondent to ask specific questions. Why didn't we initiate therapy on that day once we had those results?
Right.
Did those results not come until later in the day and you didn't have time to do
exactly.
that? Did you have 17 emergencies that were more critical, even though mm-hmm. this was really a critical case? So mm-hmm. I think there's still questions to ask that we can't necessarily get answers to.
Right. So with that in mind, is the general feeling that we need to hear from the respondent before addressing that second visit and possible violations there for failure to follow professionally accepted procedures, basically standard of care. So that would be.
Ms. Solomon?
Madam Chair, just to clarify, is this not the first time? It's already been pended once.
It was pended based on the respondent's request.
Okay. And now the respondent is not personally here today to respond to questions.
Yeah, well, this is still an initial.
Yeah.
She lives in Texas.
Right. So we would have to do a
telephone.
So is this, on the second visit, the failure to offer treatment, something we need to talk to the respondent about? Or can, is that the general feeling?
I think so. I mean, when I look at it, it looks as though the blood work results were entered into the computer at 218, and those are generally automatically propagated from the blood machine itself directly.
So that has a timestamp?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, that's part of it. That's getting close to the end of the day.
So we'll see. So I would like to make a motion. In the first instance, the failure to document, my feeling on that is a letter of concern. And so on that one, I would make a motion to issue a letter of concern on the failure to document the diagnostics and the declining of that.
I would second that.
Okay. Motion and a second to offer a letter of concern on the first part. Mm-hmm. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion passes.
And then I would make a motion regarding the second part that we move this to an informal.
Second.
Okay. A motion and a second to move case 22-131 to an informal. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? I was wondering, what did we do that properly?
Yeah, did we do
that? Since we're moving it to an informal, would we be offering a letter for one part?
Madam Chair, if I may suggest, it might be better just to do it all together in the informal, because you might
receive information. And then do the letter of concern at the informal.
And changes your mind.
Okay.
So can we, in light of that, have a motion to rescind the letter of concern, please?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to rescind the letter of concern. Now.
Second.
Okay, motion to rescind and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay.
And then do we need to redo the motion for the informal?
I don't believe that there was a vote on that, was there?
No.
Oh, okay.
I think I saw.
Yeah, there was.
There was, I'm sorry.
It was all in favor, wasn't it?
Yeah, that we all were in favor of it. Yeah.
We're moving it forward to the informal,
yeah.
Then we're fine.
So we're good.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Now we're gonna go back up to the top. Number one, 22-130 in regards to John Carr, DVM. Tracy, if you can read us the summary.
Case 22-130, the complainant is Nancy Swinsinski. The respondent is John Carr, DVM. On January 17th, 2022, Lulu, a 16-year-old female Siamese mix, was presented to respondent for a chronic skin lesion on the ventral neck. Complainant had been treating the lesion with prednisolone. Respondent recommended removal of the lesion with a histopathology. The following week, the lesion was removed and sent in for histopathology. 2 weeks later, the sutures were removed. The following week, the cat returned to respondent. Complainant reported that the incision had been missed and was resutured at the emergency facility. The wound had dehisced again. Respondent recommended allowing the incision site to heal on its own at that point. On January 26, 2022, Olivia, a 16-year-old female domestic long-haired cat, was presented to respondent for evaluation of a lesion of the left ear and the pet owner's concern for a low white cell count. Respondent examined the cat and diagnosed the lesion as ringworm. Treatment was provided. Blood work revealed a normal white cell count. Due to the ear continuing to have issues, respondent performed a cytology, which indicated bacteria with neutrophils. Ear cleanser and ointment were dispensed. An antibiotic injection was administered the following week. Complainant felt the ear was still not normal, therefore radiographs were performed. No abnormalities were noted. A couple weeks later, a cytology was performed, which revealed a staph infection and antibiotics were dispensed. The committee concluded that possible violations had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board find ARS 3222312 as it relates to R311-5011 for failure to provide professionally acceptable procedures by not conducting a complete oral examination of Olivia's ears
using an otoscope on January 25th, 2022, and February 14th, 2022. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the respondent present, but we do have the complainant here. Ms. Swinsky, you'd like to come forward? The board has reviewed all the information that you have submitted, but I'd now like to give you 5 minutes to speak.
I agree. I mean, with the ear problem, and I am just seeking to be recompensated for the money that I paid for his services, and that's pretty much all I have to say.
Thank you. Okay, let's see. Dr. James, you are the lead in this case.
Did anyone of y'all see the finances were in the initial complaint?
Reimbursement? Yeah, I didn't recall that.
I didn't recall that, but before I go and search for it, was that in?
I'll look in just 1 second.
Okay. So regarding these cases, I mean, they're two very different cases, so it's almost hard to discuss them together. What I would say in Lulu with the dehiscence, I mean, sometimes with these really inflamed skin conditions, they can do that. That skin is just irritated and not healthy enough to heal as we would expect. And I didn't really see anything. I don't think there was anything wrong with recommending that we continue and let it heal naturally on its own. I mean, sometimes that is the best course of action, and it ultimately ended up healing. So I would agree with the investigative committee on that case that there was no violation. In looking at Olivia, I think that the real issue here is whether a full ear evaluation had been done. You know, the medical records are hard because sometimes it says there's a crusty discharge and discharge from the ear, and sometimes it says it's from the outside of the ear and that the ear canal looked fine. So it's hard to tell exactly what was going on in this case. If the ear canal looked completely fine and there was no evidence of discharge and swelling and irritation, then I can see why an otoscope wasn't used, especially in a cat that hates this anyway. But then some of the medications and ear wash and Lozatex and things like that that were given kind of support more that there was an internal ear infection. So it's really just a hard one to know. I don't know if anyone saw different things than what I saw in the notes as far as the full evaluation of the ear. I think he did do a culture, he did x-rays, he had the x-rays reviewed by somebody else. Like, I don't necessarily know that I would say the case was mishandled.
Well, I found it was interesting that the cat was diagnosed with ringworm via Wood's lamp, which is not a diagnostic tool, only a screening tool to pick up sebum and other residue. And if we just have a draining ear, that could very well have been what was picked up on the Wood's lamp. So then we went off and we treated for that.
Well, and I'm not so sure it was ringworm because Lamisil topical isn't always very effective. In fact, often not very effective,
right.
And it seemed to clear up. So.
Right, and that's what I'm saying.
My guess is that, but does that...
Unless those hair follicles are what you see fluorescing. The debris fluoresces,
right.
Everything fluoresces in a case like that.
But that's where I'm like, is that below the standard of care to use a Wood's lamp? Because I think a lot of people use a Wood's lamp. That's like an initial treatment, so or initial diagnostic. So I'm not sure that I would say it falls below the standard of care. If this wasn't getting better, I'd say, yeah, you obviously would have had to do a DTM, but...
Do a culture.
Yeah. So there's just a lot of back and forth. To your point, like if in some instances the canals were clear, there was no issue, but yet we still felt that it was that severe of an ear infection that we needed to go and do radiographs and CT. So like it doesn't really follow a good, I guess a good path of care to me. It's just not.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's very inconsistent in what was going on.
I agree. I question why we went for otitis media. We didn't visualize the tympanum, we know that. We don't have head tilt.
Yeah,
we don't have anything, so. And then you're going on a hunt for, I mean, you can't blame people for doing diagnostics, but you question this otitis media.
I think it would have been helpful to be able to ask those questions. But and so we could move it to an informal if we wanted to, but I still go, is there a reason to move it to an informal? Is that going to really change anything if he says, well, I felt it was warranted. Can we really say that falls below the standard of care because you wanted to do more? I guess, you know, the investigative committee's concern was not using an otoscope specifically, and I don't necessarily know. I guess I could say I would be concerned that the ear wasn't fully evaluated, but I don't know that I could say that for sure based on the information we have.
Yeah, it's a tough one because it is just kind of not an ideal way of treating a patient, the bouncing all over the place with your diagnostics. But the other argument could be if you didn't use an otoscope, why are you then prescribing medications that are going into the ear? Like, isn't that...
Well, that's why I was like, yeah, like, then you prescribed medications that make you think that it was internal.
It was an infection.
You know, but again, how many ears have you looked at and been like, that ear's infected, and I'm not going to be able to see anything anyway because it's so bad.
Absolutely.
Right? That you're... You didn't use an otoscope,
but you knew you had an infection.
Right. You know, so like...
Well, it's painful to stick an otoscope in those ears. So you're putting animals through pain for no reason a lot of times.
And you can't especially see anything, a cat. But, like, I find the cats
like
hate that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not saying that you don't do it,
yeah,
but I'm just saying
place,
that...
You don't have to say you have to do it every time.
Yeah.
I guess I would say, then I will make a motion in the case of 22-130 that we issue a letter of concern regarding full evaluation of the ear canal and documentation of what was going on, you know, clear documentation of what was going on in the case.
Okay, can I discuss Lulu just briefly?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the only question I had on that one was, I didn't see anywhere where there was antibiotics used in this. And based on the appearance of the lesion, I think I would have used antibiotics, and certainly when the histopath came back and said there's bacteria in this and there were no antibiotics used. And I believe the cat was on steroids. And then the other issue I had in relation to that is now we have a technician doing a suture removal on this terrible lesion with a T-shaped incision, and the tech thought it was fine to take out the sutures and it dehisced. So in that case, should the respondent have said, you know, I need to do this suture removal, or at least let me see it before you take these out? And then the no antibiotics in this case of this obviously infected lesion. I didn't know if anybody had any thoughts about that.
I didn't see that antibiotics weren't given, so let me go back and unscan.
Yeah, I didn't see them.
I mean, I think initially they thought this was immune-mediated. The cat had been on Pred.
Mm-hmm. But came back pyo.
They did blood work. White blood cells were normal. I would agree that I think I would have done antibiotics. I'm trying to see here, though, and I don't see them in there either.
No, I didn't see them. And like I said, especially after the report came back, and there was bacteria all over this. And it was pyo, the pyo granulomatous, the pyo part of that is infection. So, and then it fell apart. So incisions like this, with this kind of lesion, they can dehisce. Yeah, not true, but in an ideal situation, looking backwards, I would have left these in a lot longer and used antibiotics and made sure this thing was totally healed and I saw that it was healed before, because in the audio it was, no, I never saw it. The it was scheduled for suture removal and the technician thought it looked okay and took the sutures out. So whether that's a violation or not, if that's following accepted, that's...
I definitely feel like it would have been ideal to have antibiotics on board. So the question is, do we all feel that's enough to move it to an informal to ask those questions?
So veterinary clinic, they discuss clavulose on February 9th.
February 9th?
When was the surgery?
I think it was from the Scottsdale Veterinary Clinic that they might have.
That was the second surgery?
That was at Scottsdale Veterinary Clinic when she went to the emergency.
The researcher.
Yeah.
They used antibiotics.
Yes.
Then.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. When it was researcher in emergency, yes. They went.
So that might be why, because
the cat was resutured somewhere else, came back after that for the recheck here. The initial exam, it looks like they did not feel that it was infected at that point in time. That's at least what I read in the statement. So they didn't put him on antibiotics, that's why it's not in that board, but it was by another.
And then I had one more thing on the Lulu side. Did anybody else catch on the x-rays when they were taking images that there are fingers in the x-ray? It's on page 11.
I don't know that, I mean, that might be a...
In a letter?
Yeah, but that might... I don't know that there's a statute that says you have to keep your staff safe.
Might just be a friendly reminder.
Well, I mean, yes, and it's obviously would probably hit some other departments that would be concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's a standard of care. I don't know. Question is, are they his fingers? No. All right, so we have a motion for the letter of concern. We've gone back and talked about it. Do we want to vote on it or change it? I feel like, in light of the antibiotics being prescribed somewhere else, I probably wouldn't push that issue.
Okay.
I could also note, you know, proper PPE. But I don't know that that's necessarily a violation.
It might not be a violation, but again, just
adding it to my letter of concern.
Also, so the complainant did ask about repayment, and it is in her complaint request. Do we need to address that piece of it?
Only if you find violations.
Okay. Yeah. So I need to remember.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so does that change it for anybody if you have to find a violation in order for the owner to pursue getting financial reimbursement? Does this mean we want to move it to an informal to look into this any further?
Yeah, I hate to link the two like that. Well,
yeah,
we think there ought to be a reimbursement, so now we have to find a violation that we wouldn't have otherwise.
That feels weird, doesn't
that
it?
That feels weird. Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
All right, so there's a motion. We have a second?
No.
Did the motion include dismiss and letter of concern? I think I just heard letter of concern.
I might have just said letter of concern. Dismiss and letter of concern. The letter of concern was specific to Olivia and completing the full ear examination and ensuring that medical records are clear as to what was going on throughout the case. And then we could add in there with regards to Lulu to ensure that proper PPE is being utilized in the clinic, specifically during taking of x-rays.
Is there anything else to add on that? Is there a second to the letter of concern?
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to offer Dr. Carr a letter of concern. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. Nay. Motion passes. And that concludes that case. Okay, now we are on to number two, which is case 22-137 in regards to Lorenzo Gonzalez, DVM. Tracy, if you'll read the case summary.
Yes, case 22-137, complainant George Divas, respondent Lorenzo Gonzalez, DVM. On June 7th, 2022, Kane, a 1.5-year-old male, chocolate laboratory retriever, was presented to respondent for a neuter procedure. The procedure was performed and the dog was discharged that afternoon. A short time later, the dog passed away. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board find ARS 322232 number 11 for gross negligence for discharging the dog in an unstable condition. The dog's surgery ended at 9:52 a.m. and the dog was discharged at 3:30 p.m., still not recovered from anesthesia, which contributed to the death of the dog at 6 p.m. that evening. ARS 3222312, as it relates to R311-5011, failure to provide courteous verbal interchange with the pet owner by not offering a necropsy on the dog. ARS 3222-3218, as it relates to R311-502E, failure to provide complete discharge instructions of a surgical patient and not documenting in the medical record that discharge instructions were provided. And ARS 3222-32 number 21, as it relates to R311-502L7A, failure to document in the medical record the concentration of PEN-G, ketamine, butorphanol, and xylazine that were administered to the dog. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the respondent present. We do have the complainant present. If you would like to come forward.
Good morning.
Good morning. We have reviewed the information that you've submitted. If
yes.
You would like to state your name for the record, and then we'd like to give you up to 5 minutes to speak.
My name is Georgia Davis.
Thank you. I'm so sorry for the loss of your pet.
Thank you. You want me to tell you the facts of what happened?
Anything you'd like to share.
Dr. Gonzalez requires all of his clients to bring their pets at 8:30 in the morning on the day that they do surgery. There's multiple pets being dropped off. And we did that, and he said he would be available for pickup for a basic neuter between 3 and 5. We got there at 3:30. We were not taken to him. We couldn't see him for a while. When they brought him out, I called his name, and he went to my, across the room away from me, slumped on the ball and collapsed. They came out, they took him back in. I don't know what they did, if anything, to him to help him in any way. Then about an hour later, they released him to us, said he was fine. He could not get in the truck on his own. We had to pick him up and put him into the vehicle, or he just collapsed in the back, but he was breathing at the time. We got home and my dog died at 6:01 p.m. This shouldn't have happened. He reeked of anesthesia. I complained of that. And it's my understanding that he gave my dog meds at 9 a.m. and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, right before we got there. Why? Aren't you supposed to pull him out after surgery? Yes, you are. I'm a retired MA. I worked OBGYN for 20 plus years here in the Valley. What he did was wrong. Grossly wrong. That's all I have to say. Okay.
Thank you.
He shouldn't be dead.
Thank you. Let me step back. Dr. Wright, you were the lead on this case?
Yes, I am, and I'm sorry for your loss. I mean, going through this, I have questions. I mean, it's just flat out. There's a lot of stuff going on here, and especially when I'm looking at something for the potential violations that we're seeing here, I see a real reason to move this to an informal to seek more information. So I make a motion to move this to informal to seek more information.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Case 22-137 is going to move to an informal.